Cliffcentral.com.
I've got something important to tell you.
Cliffcentral.com.
I was born 1911, Chickasaw County, Piedmont Plantation.
And did you know as a girl growing up that one day you'd be a maid?
Yes, ma'am, I did.
And you knew that because?
My mama was a maid. My grandmama was a house slave.
The Help is a 2011 American film directed and written by Tate Taylor. It recounts the story of a young white woman and aspiring journalist, Eugenia. She's also known as Skeeter in the movie. And she focuses on her relationship with two black maids, Abilene and Minnie. This was during the civil rights era in 1962. She was quite a forward thinker, and she became increasingly disgusted with the attitudes and poor treatment of the Help by their white socialite friends. So she decided to write a book about the experiences. Since it was both illegal and dangerous at the time to write about anything that spoke to social equality of the races, they collected the stories in secret using aliases and anonymity. Let's fast forward to 2016, where we have two women, Mbali and Tuliza, from a different part of the world that experiences legalized racial prejudice, finding that the same need has remained 54 years later to tell the stories of the women in other people's homes. Although there's more to that, we thought it important to explore the parallels between then and now, that story and this one. Thanks as always for joining my lovely co-host Mbali and myself, Tuliza, and make sure to tell us what you think is similar about our stories on our Twitter page at Made Project. So let's start off with the first scene. You're about to hear what happens between Skeeter, the journalist, and Abilene, who's the main maid that started it all. Let's first listen to the clip and discuss it afterwards.
Yes, ma'am. Everything okay?
I just wanted to talk to you.
You got some more Ms. Myrna questions for me?
Oh, no, no. I just wanted to talk. We never finished our conversation at Elizabeth's. About that book I want to write? I'd really like to interview you, Abilene. I know it's scary.
They set my cousin Chanel's car on fire just because she went down to the voting station.
A book like this has never been written before.
Because there's a reason. I do this with you, I might as well burn my own house down.
I promise we'll be careful.
This already ain't careful, Mosquito. You're not known as what scared me the most. Scared me more than Jim Crow.
Here's my phone number. And my car's here. I could just take you home.
No, ma'am.
Sure, it's such an interesting scene that, because actually Skeeter reminds me, you know, she's so well-meaning, but she's so naive that she reminds me a lot of ourselves.
yeah,
she doesn't realize how awkward it is to be standing at that bus stop with that woman, with a bus full of domestic workers or maids in that context, and then white women kind of onlookers as well.
Yeah.
And how uncomfortable that might make Abilene feel. She's on a mission, much like we were, and... Yeah, it's kind of very unaware of herself. But I think that is such an advantage for a narrator to not be completely aware of a situation, because it can definitely unnerve you. And I think that had we been aware of how uncomfortable we would make both the domestic workers and their employers and everyone in between, that we might have shied away from it too. So it can appear insensitive, but actually it's well-meaning, and it's because you have this very idealistic idea of what justice should be.
Yeah.
And you live in that world. So yeah.
And I mean, if you like remember how sometimes we'd fetch the ladies from the spa to make sure that we don't fetch them in front of their homes.
Yeah, exactly.
So still having the same issues with like not wanting to be seen or associated to certain people because they, and I mean also using aliases. So there's really such similarities, like Massive. You know, we mentioned 54 years later, still the same thing.
Massive similarities. But now let's go back to the burning of the car. It's very interesting because they never say who burns the car, right?
Mm.
And it could either be the employers who burned the car, or it could be fellow maids who felt like her act exposed the rest of the community to harm. So her going to vote, that's why her car was burned, right?
Mm.
So it could, it could either be the employers who felt like it was a gross violation of sorts.
That's a great, great point.
Yeah, so yeah. I wonder who. Because it's interesting because like in that position, the martyr can face threat, I guess, from both sides.
Yeah, and we actually see it as well, like all the naysayers, you know, when she decided that, when Aibeline, the main character, main maid, decided that she was going to do it, and she was trying to recruit other maids, they wouldn't just turn her down, they'd be frustrated with her.
Yeah, yeah, and you can't win. And I remember a domestic worker telling us a story about how, you know, she got up in a community once and took a leadership role. And she thought she was doing something exemplary to empower the community. I don't remember what specifically she was talking about, but definitely got up to say something that would empower the community, right? And actually ended up getting the greatest backlash from the very people she was trying to uplift. And I think that can happen so often, and it's almost like the martyr's dilemma.
Yeah, and it's actually so interesting now as you say that, because looking at the scene, it, you know, the way that it's filmed, it makes it seem like she's only wary of the white woman's eyes, but actually it could also be wariness of the black woman's eyes.
Yeah, such a conundrum. Anyway, so you were talking about the criminalization as well of what they were doing. I don't know, I can't remember the specific law, but I don't know if you want to play the scene first.
Any person printing, publishing, or circulating written matter urging for public acceptance of social equality between whites and Negroes is subject to imprisonment. Hello?
Yeah, so that's really quite profound. But also has an air of apartheid. Go ahead.
I guess I'm just really puzzled at how very, very straightforward that is, right? Mm. That there is a common understanding that the Negroes and the whites are not equal.
Are not equal.
Right?
Right.
And yet now, right, in America, as black people are fighting for as much civil rights and equality and that kind of stuff, there's still that you know, the saying from, I guess, the powerful that, no, it was never about dehumanizing, or it was never about...
I mean, look, you know? It's definitely a convenient spin on the story. What I do, compared to this here... scenario. What I want to kudos the apartheid government for is at least pretending it was about equality. Like they had all these interesting ways to justify why black and white people should be separate. I think they went as far as preserving different cultures or something like that. But here, they're not even pretending. They're just saying anyone who's advocating publicly for social equality between blacks and whites is a criminal.
Yeah.
Straight out, babe. Yeah. Mississippi. Only that Mississippi racism is so real. Like they talk, it's like an urban legend that. It's like, I remember Trevor Noah talks about it all the time. It's like, there's racism and then there's Mississippi racism. That is so real.
Yeah.
It might be the only place in the world that rivals the apartheid state is Mississippi.
Is it in the South?
It's definitely in the South. It's where black people used to hang from trees. Yeah.
That place.
I mean, it might even
with
be
the
like
Jim Crow laws. Okay.
Yeah, it might be the capital of the Ku Klux Klan.
Oh, God.
But yeah, that place is wow.
Okay, so that's why this was as big a deal as it was to write this book, because it was literally in the heart of it.
Mm. And here is this white woman, and bless her heart, you know, not only is she facing the threat of being ostracized, which she already is socially to a large extent, but she actually might literally go to jail.
Yeah.
And she does it anyway.
Yeah.
That is profound. So I would like to ask you, Talisa, Cindy, in that situation, would you still be sitting here on this show doing what we're doing?
Yeah, I actually would. Yeah. I mean, and I would probably do exactly what she did, you know, with using aliases, making sure I park three streets up and then secretly finding my way to the homes, you know, to get interviews. I think I would definitely do it. I mean, I guess it would also be different for us because we're also black.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess the rules would be a lot worse, you know, in general. I think there's some leniency because she is white that I'm sure she'd be offered. But yes, I would definitely do it. And just what I find interesting, though, is the fact that we're using the same means to get these stories as she was using when it was actually illegal. So we've also used aliases and we've also like snuck, you know, the
and yet it is perfectly it's perfectly legal.
Yeah,
and to me that speaks to how things can be outlawed, but like
threat still remains
because behavioral patterns unfortunately become ingrained and they don't change because something is legal, you know. And that's why simply taking away an unjust law, so simply taking away the apartheid system wasn't enough to rehabilitate this country or you know, to restore it. And so many of those mindsets still exist. I mean, we saw with the, you know, a similar document was the Your Ubuntu Servant and You. We did a show on that, and that was basically guidelines provided by the Department of Non-European Affairs during apartheid. There were guidelines on the madam or the white employer Bantu servant relationship.
Yes.
And there were like some serious atrocities in there. And though
it was very polite. That's actually what was quite.
Yeah, the tone.
Creepy about it.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. The apartheid guys had a tone about them.
Yeah. Like, yeah, they got it down.
Like, it's that like very charming racism.
Yeah. Yeah, we're being kind, actually. It's communal living.
Use a different toilet, but here, have a cookie. Yeah.
Exactly.
But yeah, and though a lot of those kind of behaviors don't necessarily exist the way they used to, certainly the mindsets do. Right. So I think the treatment is maybe a little bit better, but the sentiment remains.
And so when you actually see them expressing their fear, it's so real, you know, and it's just as real as if we were doing something very illegal that could get us into huge trouble. So then we get into one of the characters who's sort of the villain. She speaks of the idea of, you know, the maids and them being separate but equal. And she's obsessed with getting, you know, separate toilets placed into everyone's homes. I guess to like pass that as a law or something.
Yeah, there was an actual bill.
Yeah, a bill. There we go. So she was determined to have this bill passed. And I mean, even the way she sort of talks to the maids about it is if they should be really proud.
It's crazy. And so what we're going to do here is we're going to kind of play you a series of clips from the movie where she talks about the passing of this bill.
Louie, I wish you'd just go use the bathroom.
I'm fine.
Oh, she's just upset because the nigger uses the guest bath and so do we.
Abilene, go check on me, Mobley.
Yes, ma'am.
Just go use mine and Raleigh's. If Abilene uses the guest bath, I'm sure she uses yours too.
She does not.
Wouldn't you rather them take their business outside?
Have y'all seen the cover of Life this week? Jackie's never looked more regal.
Tell Raleigh every penny he spends on a college bathroom, he'll get back in spades when y'all sell. Oh, it's just plain dangerous. They carry different diseases than we do. Pass. That's why I've drafted the Home Health Sanitation Initiative.
The what?
A disease preventative bill that requires every white home to have a separate bathroom for the colored help. It's been endorsed by the White Citizens Council.
Maybe we should just build you a bathroom outside, Hilly.
You ought not to joke about the colored situation. I'll do whatever it takes to protect our children.
Hurry, Abilene. May Mobley's up and I'm off to the doctor.
Abilene? That's Avery's bathroom, Mama. Hey, Avery.
No, honey. Promise me you won't go in there, okay?
I'm right here, baby girl.
See, it's so nice to have your own Abilene.
That's mine.
Now, I just found out the Surgeon General has reviewed the Home Health Sanitation Initiative that I drafted, and he passed it along to Governor Barnett! Abilene, are you enjoying your new bathroom over at Elizabeth's? Nice to have your own. In an Abilene.
Yes, ma'am. And I thank you.
Separate, but equal. That's what Ross Barnett says, and you can't argue with the governor.
Sadistic woman, that one.
Beyond sadistic, but also, again, that very polite
yeah.
tone. Which, yeah. white people have this thing down, though, hey? You know what I mean? Like, sometimes, seriously, no. Sometimes, and I noticed this particularly in the workplace with white authorities versus black authorities. So where I've had a white director versus a black director. A white director give you criticism, the worst, the most scathing criticism. Like, for some reason, you'll still think they're being nice to you.
And they like you.
And they like you.
They still respect you. Meanwhile, you'll be out in 6 months.
Exactly. They can fire you to your face and somehow you'll still want to give them a hug.
Yeah, you'll think that they've done the best for you. Like, oh, the way you thought of me. You've let me go because you know that I have great inspiration.
It's amazing diplomacy, but it's so sinister, whereas black people are just mean.
No poker face.
Mean. But it's quite an interesting tactic that... But what we were talking about earlier is how weird it is that there is this obsession with separate amenities. So, you know, using separate toilets in the documents that we mentioned before that criminalize the publishing of material that advocates social equality. There's also part in there that talks about, I think, black and white people using separate things. I mean, there's that one example about black and white students cannot exchange books.
Yes.
Right. They cannot use books interchangeably. And I didn't know if that was still about like them not touching the same things because black people carry different diseases or if that was about the exchange of education as well, which is also quite an interesting layer and a layer that definitely existed during apartheid, right?
Yes.
I mean, I remember reading somewhere an apartheid law where, like, that employers of black servants were told expressly in this law that they were not to teach their servants to read.
Yes.
Right? Which is fascinating. Yeah. And then we have this education system where everyone, you know, the curriculums were according to race.
Yeah.
Right? And the
Bantu syllabus was, made of a lower standard.
Yeah, it was made deliberately shit.
Yes.
And it sort of got tiered from, like, you know, the blackest of the black.
What does that mean?
To the whitest of, I don't know, girl. It's like the poorest of the poor. I'm sure there was such a thing. But... Yeah, it's this obsession with separation. But what I find particularly interesting with somebody who is hands-on everything in your house, including your children, right? Like these women in this movie, they have their hands in the diapers.
And if we were to track it back, like even further back than the civil rights movement of the 1960s, when women, slaves were breastfeeding white children.
Exactly.
So that is a fluid coming out of a black woman's body.
Exactly. And yet...
that is comfortable enough
for some
reason. We can't
spot the irony in not letting them use plates and toilets.
Actually, I do wonder how the association to very particular uses came about. You know, so using a toilet... is wrong because of the diseases you can catch. But again, like having fluids out of her body isn't as dangerous. Like where did those associations come from?
I have absolutely no idea. It's like completely superficial in my mind.
And then we see it today with, you know, one of the ladies that we've spoken to who said she can't wash her clothes in the same washing machine.
Yeah.
You know, as her employers, because they just won't let her. But they'd rather wash, you know, the dog's things in
so weird.
In the washing machine, but not her stuff.
It's just really, really weird, irrational fears. Another really interesting scene was then where Minnie, who's one of the maids in the movie, passes on that knowledge to her daughter, who's about to become a maid.
Yeah.
And she's talking to her about the decorum.
Yes.
And she's giving her advice, but it's a little bit more aggressive than that. Mm. Right. Mm. She's telling her what she must and must not do on the job. And she's very serious.
Yeah. And very specific.
And she talks about, the one thing she says is, if you're cooking the food and you use a spoon to taste it, don't put the spoon back in, or else you may as well throw out the whole thing. Mm. You know, and her daughter's kind of rolling eyes.
Yeah.
And she kind of snaps a bit. She gets irritable because she wanted to take her so seriously. And it is very maternal, because I think she's doing it to protect her daughter, but it's such an irony.
Yeah.
It's almost counter maternal to reinforce the injustice. Mm. But at the same time, I understand that she's doing it to protect the daughter's job, you know?
Completely. And I mean, when we also see when Minnie eventually ends up working for Celia. When she ends up working for Celia, who's wonderful and just hasn't been socialized into treating a maid the way that the others were treating her, you know, and how she was able to basically break every rule in terms of interaction with her maid. You know, it's and then how she's the one that's actually an outcast in the group for you know, I mean, for other things, but also for just not doing that stuff, for not being like the others.
Yeah.
And so how it's just crazy how extremely normalized that prejudice was.
No, absolutely. And actually, just to contrast it, I think we should play that scene where Celia hires Minnie.
Five other maids have already turned me down. Let me at least get you some bus money.
Now, when you hear me say I don't want to clean this house?
Wait. So you'll do it?
Oh, no hugging, no hugging.
I'm sorry. It's the first time I've hired a maid. Come on!
The other cool thing that, or interesting thing here for me, was how excited Celia is to be hiring her first maid.
Yeah.
It was almost a rite of passage for these women, right?
Yeah.
And I almost feel, look, there obviously were other issues around her not being accepted by the rest of her peers. Mm. But it certainly seems as though, you know, finding a maid, or she was even rejected by maids, right?
Yeah.
So that was definitely one of her challenges. Mm. And so it's interesting to think of this hiring of a maid not just as something of exploitation, but as something of status.
Yeah. I get the impression that if you were able to establish a good relationship, that was a reflection of how good a housewife you were, so to speak, you know, that you can keep your business intact, you know?
Yeah, together. But how interesting is it that some maids wouldn't have her? Because she, and it might have a lot to do, I suspect, with her temperament and the fact that she threw out the rules, and she, you know, she was so open and actually warm towards them.
Yeah.
Was something that they weren't used to and probably made them quite uncomfortable.
But something that they might have thought as well is that they could get into trouble. They could maybe get arrested because maybe, you know, officials would think that they're the ones that are crossing the line.
Right.
And not necessarily Celia.
Right, right.
So maybe they were also looking out for, you know, trying to avoid any place that could get them into trouble.
Oh my gosh, what a defensive mess.
Completely.
Wow.
Very scary. And then we get into the very interesting topic of religion, which we know has played such a significant role, you know, from like African missionaries coming and missionaries not exactly being as forthcoming with their true intentions. But then we see how religion plays itself out as well in both the narratives of the white woman as well as the narratives of the black cast. So let's just play quickly. So we'll play two scenes. The one scene is of, of Abilene, again, the main maid in the story, who is at church and she's being consoled and being encouraged by the word of God. And then we have another scene where we have Hilly, who's again the villain, and she's talking about, she's rather discussing a charitable deed that she could do and how she uses the word of God again against doing the deed.
Yeah, so it's just different versions of morality, but have a listen.
See, courage isn't just about being brave.
Yes.
Courage is daring to do what is right in spite of the weakness of our flesh.
That's right.
And God tells us, commands us, compels us to love. Amen?
Yes.
See, love, as exemplified by our Lord Jesus Christ, is to be prepared to put yourself in harm's way for your fellow man. And by your fellow man, I mean your brother, your sister, your neighbor, your friend, and your enemy. See, if you can love your enemy, you already have the victory. Let's stand. All right.
Miss Hilly, I would like to ask you and Mr. Williams something. My twin boys graduated from high school, both on the honor roll. Well, me and my husband, we've been saving for years to send them to Tougaloo. We short about $75 on one of the tuitions.
Woo, I am late. I gotta get going. See you tonight, honey.
Okay. Go on. Well, now we're faced with having to choose which son can go if we don't come up with the money. Would you consider giving us a loan? I'd work every day for free till it was paid off.
That's not working for free, Yul May. That's paying off a debt.
Yes, ma'am. As a Christian, I'm doing you a favor. See, God don't give charity to those who are well and able. You need to come up with this money on your own, okay? Yes, ma'am.
You'll thank me one day.
Interesting, oh. Right?
Wow. Yeah. Oh, God, this religion thing.
So who's right?
Is so incredibly convenient. I don't know when we're gonna. Let me hold back.
I found Hilly's spin so interesting.
No, and I think she genuinely believed that to be a moral act. I don't even think she was manipulating. Look, she definitely has a mean streak.
Sure, she, yeah.
But I actually think there was a part of her that believed.
She's
that
doing the right thing.
She's being a good Christian woman by denying this woman a loan and saying God doesn't give charity to the able.
Yes. Whilst at the same time, you know, she knows that maids on average didn't get high enough incomes.
Mm.
And that was, again, because of, you know, the prejudice that existed within that society. So they were just unable to access more money. Mm. So, you know, and that was... It was an unfair treatment, and yet that didn't. I mean, obviously that
actually,
didn't register.
You know what? I'm lying to you. I actually don't think she believed it for a second. I think she was just manipulating the holy text to suit her answer, which was no.
But it's one of those things that are a good enough form of manipulation that you can end up believing it.
Yeah.
So even though in the moment she might not have believed it, she could have thought, oh, actually. That does make sense.
Yeah, but I also think, a lot of the time in oppressive regimes or power situations, the powerful use the faith of the victims against them.
Absolutely.
African Americans are notoriously religious people.
They are. They are. But what is beautiful is that it keeps hope alive.
It keeps hope alive. But as soon as the nefarious parties catch on to that,
yeah,
right, they're able to use that to manipulate the situation and to further kind of reinforce whatever injustice, because given that justification she used, right, knowing that the maid was very religious in that situation,
yes, absolutely,
she knew that it would be more effective than just saying no.
Completely. And remember,
and it probably was, and she probably then went back and internalized it, and she might have believed it and then passed it on to her kids.
Sure, interesting. But at the same time, she did steal a ring.
She did later on,
to sell it, because she was also really desperate. So it's also interesting that even though she was, you know, possibly quite religious herself, that sometimes God will understand. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes there's the impression that there's certain circumstances that God will forgive you for.
Oh my gosh. So this, for me, raises such interesting questions around the relationship, the very convenient marriage that states and regimes, like the United States, for instance, have with God. Right?
Absolutely.
And why?
Yes.
Because the United States, again, is very popular. No. Notorious is a bad word because it makes it sound bad, but I actually think it is bad. But the United States is widely known to be a very, very religious democracy.
Mm.
Right? And accepted by all Americans to be that. Right? God is first in the U.S., but I don't know if people ever question why. And I think it actually might be a lot more strategic on the part of the state than people think.
Probably.
Because then they can use religious spin.
Yeah.
To justify a lot of things. And particularly, I think, where you have a melting pot of a society where there are people you are trying to balance or manage who have such different interests.
Yeah.
If you could just find something like Christianity that they have in common, you know, the Muslim element, but that's why, I mean, for instance, but that's why they can unite so many Americans who come from different places and different backgrounds. They can unite them against Islam is because they've used Christianity.
And what it feels like as well is that you can have people trust your intent more if it's founded on religious values and beliefs. Definitely.
So there's minorities in the US who have minority issues, but happen to be Christian and identify with the rest of Americans on that level, who still then will be part of the war against other minorities.
Completely.
So weird.
And you know, it actually also reminds me now of one of the ladies again that we interviewed. And remember, like, I think there was the one time she might have missed our meetings because she went to church or something. But then there were instances as well where she missed church, because before she was missing church to come and have interviews with us on the Sundays, because that's really the only time that we could do it. And she was feeling so much guilt, but at the same time, because she believed that she was doing something really, really great and amazing, she did also have that impression that God will forgive her.
Right.
But then at a certain stage, she just got tired and she really wanted to go to church because she really missed it. But that she also had that conflict, and she also sort of thought that it was something forgivable.
Somebody said religion might be the only reason that the poor don't eat the rich. On to the next one.
We want to touch on the men in their lives. So, I mean, this is quite a sort of female-based relationship story. It's mostly about the madams and the relationships with the maids.
Which is currently the story, you know, like to this day.
Yes, actually.
This is very much still a female narrative. It's about madams and domestic workers. But the men's do play an incredibly powerful role, but it's so indirect.
Yeah. And I mean, I have to commend the movie actually on how well it portrayed the presence of the men in not incredibly overt ways, but the presence was really felt, and also the controlling nature of their presence.
Yeah,
or sometimes destructive, you know, like.
Yeah, yeah. No, I did also really appreciate that, because I mean, you know, to this day we haven't had a guy on the main station or a male employer, you know, and he's coming, but it's just it's harder than you think to engage men
completely
in the space. So for them to build it into the narrative really warrants some props, eh?
Mm.
Yeah.
And so they did it in I mean, I guess you can unpack it into ways. The one was basically the white men in their lives, and now I'm referring to the maids, so the white men that were their employers, as well as the black men in their lives, so whether it was their husbands or their brothers or whatever it was, so the male figures in their lives. So we'll quickly play just two clips regarding the presence of the white men in their lives.
I bought you this damn house, and I put up with your new clothes and your trips to New Orleans, but this takes the goddamn cake.
Haley spoke to the Surgeon General, and she also said it'll add value to our home.
Yes, Mae Mobley didn't go to college in that damn bathroom.
Who is covering the cost and said you could just do William's taxes to pay her back.
We don't take orders from the Holbrooks. Skeeter, how you doing?
Fine.
Fix me a sandwich, Abilene.
I work Sunday through Friday.
No, you can't work at all on the weekends.
Okay. Well, what time you want me here?
After 9, and you gotta leave before 4.
Okay. Now, what your husband say you can pay?
Johnny doesn't know I'm bringing in help.
And what Mr. Johnny gonna do when he come home and find a colored woman in his house?
It's not like I'd be fibbing. I just want him to think I can do this on my own. I really need a maid.
So, sure. Very interesting, those clips. What I find is men in this movie have a lot of power.
Mm.
But the power they have is over their wives. But that means they have indirect power over the maids.
Mm.
Right? And that's why I think it's a very good thing to weave into the story. Because, for instance, the first clip is a conversation that that this guy is having with his wife about building a toilet in their house, an additional toilet for their domestic worker, or their maid, rather. Sorry, I'm going to keep interchanging the two.
Yeah.
And he's talking to his wife in the presence of the domestic worker who's in the background, right? So the conversation is about her, but he's having it with his wife, okay? And then he gets frustrated and storms off because him and his wife won't agree. Walks straight past her and says, "Abilene, make me a sandwich." And that's it. That's it. That is complete disregard for her presence in the room and her being the subject of the conversation that they just had. He doesn't see her at all.
So it's interesting, actually, because she sort of moves from... She's actually just a tool, right? So, you know, for him to only acknowledge her in order to get something from it, you know, is that she's just...
It's very interesting, though, because...
just a tool in the home.
But he makes the call in terms of whether or not she gets a different toilet. But he has that conversation purely with his wife because that is the only way in which he's willing to engage with her presence.
Sort of like deciding which curtains to get. You don't have to consult the curtain.
Exactly. It's true. That's very true. Similar thing happens in the second scene where the maid is asking, what's her name, Hilly, and her husband for a loan.
Yes, but I mean, just also to note that in that scene, she looks directly at Hilly. She doesn't even look at the man, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yes, so there's already, like, she's already got an impression of how to approach them or who to approach.
Yeah. And this is, I mean, this is you know, Mississippi back in the day, right? Mm-hmm. This thing is set back in the day.
Yeah.
So it's safe to assume that the husband controls the money.
Yes.
Right? And so that is actually who would ultimately grant the loan.
Yes.
But still, the maid knows to look directly at his wife. Mm-hmm. And he is so uninvolved or unengaged that he's perfectly happy to excuse himself as soon as the matter which he controls comes up.
Completely.
He's more than happy to use the wife as the proxy.
Yeah.
And that's really what, in large part, the wives represent in this movie, is a proxy between the men and the domestic worker or the maid. So I would argue that the men, in large part, the relationship here, the interests in this relationship are between between the man and the maid.
Yes.
The wife is an intermediary.
Yes.
Because all the wife wants, ultimately, is to impress her man.
Mm.
If you think about how when... Who's the woman who was outlawed again? What's her name? The blonde lady.
Celia.
When Celia hired Minnie in secret in this movie, because she needed help in the house, the reason she wanted to hire a maid in secret was so her husband wouldn't find out, because she wanted her husband to think she could do all of these things. She was fully domesticated.
Although I did wonder, because, you know, Minnie, who Celia hired, was wondering about the presence of the husband. And then, you know, Celia told her that the husband doesn't know. I had wondered, how then is she going to pay? You know, because she wasn't working.
Yeah. No, I'm sure she would have made a plan around it.
So maybe from like a stipend that
something
she gets
or something.
But
she made herself very clear in that she didn't want her husband to know.
Mm.
But again, it's about the husband.
Mm, it is.
You know? Mm. And a lot of these women, we know in those days, women were living, I mean, throughout this movie, there's a strong narrative around Skeeter, who's writing this book, not being able to get a man.
Yes. Then she eventually does.
Mm.
And then she loses the man because she wrote the book. And so it again shows how much it actually affects the male role.
Yeah.
Because he felt completely ashamed of her. He felt ashamed of the book. He felt like she was trying to stir trouble that apparently didn't exist in his eyes. He was just frustrated and he left her for it. And so again, it shows how invested they are in that relationship staying exactly as it is.
It's all about the man.
It is.
And yet, he's completely absent.
Because the thing is, you don't want as a man to for other people to think that you married a useless wife or a useless woman.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want your house to be a complete mess all the time, or, you know, for your wife to seem to be struggling. So really, it is actually the
maid
is
a thing that the wives commodify.
Mm.
So that they can be commodified by their men. Or they can be a commodity to their men.
Yes, yes, definitely. And it's interesting as well, because again, like, the you know, with some of the domestic workers that we've interviewed, there's a volatile relationship there with the man, that often they won't necessarily go and ask or speak to the man. You know, some never speak to the men.
Mm.
Some even feel uncomfortable with the presence of the husbands in the home and require a certain kind of distance or have a certain kind of fear associated to them.
Mm.
And that most of the time they'll speak about, you know, the relationship that they have with their madams, so to speak. It's profound.
And then there's the blackmail component, which plays a role in this movie, particularly in Minnie's life. And it's also a bit of a weird one. But first of all, I think we'll play a scene where Minnie's husband comes into the picture.
Minnie, she got what she deserved, Abilene. But now I ain't gonna never get no job again. Oh, Lord, Leroy gonna kill me. Leroy?
What you done did now, Minnie?
Get off that phone. Leroy, please! Minnie? Minnie!
Please, please. Now, this seems like a common story, huh?
But again, it's about the men.
It is.
It's all about the man.
It is.
So the interesting thing here is that at a later stage where, and we already mentioned, there's the scene where Minnie is telling her daughter about the appropriate decorum of a maid, because her daughter's now been taken out of school by this husband of hers so that the daughter can help him to make ends meet, because Minnie's now lost her job.
Yes, and her reputation's been ruined because Hilly's been going around town spreading lies about her.
Yes, and the reason that this man is abusing Minnie is because Minnie doesn't have a job.
Yes.
Which is just completely profound, you know, how obsessed this man is. And look,
but at the time, he probably couldn't get a high-paying job himself.
Mm.
And so there was a high necessity for the income that she was bringing in.
Yeah. But
I mean, not an excuse, not, you know, but definitely a reason.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that reason. But I guess it's also an interesting one, the relationship he has with his own livelihood and economic value and her job as a maid.
Mm. But the thing is as well, although...
I'm going to beat you into getting a job.
No, but although Minnie did do the right thing, she used the toilet inside because it was just thunder and storm outside, and she didn't want to... She was afraid to go to the outside toilet, so she just used the toilet inside, and that's why she got fired. She did also know that she was putting her job at risk, right?
Mm.
Again, in a time and a climate where she could very easily get fired for that, she was reckless, right?
Mm.
On those terms. And so I think that was also what he was punishing her for. I think in the story, he's just generally quite abusive.
Mm.
Because, like, that's the impression that we get, that he was abusive even before it, but then, you know, it might have just gotten worse. So again, it's no excuse for the man's actions, but also I think he was sort of punishing her for being very deliberately reckless.
Again, it's never about the women. It's always about the men. It boils down to that.
It is. And also with Abilene's life, how there's the absence of men,
yeah.
The complete absence of men. So her son that passed away, so it's absence through loss. And then we actually don't really hear about her husband or just, you know, the father of her child.
Mm.
And so it's really interesting as well how we see today that it's still the running story in terms of, you know, men in black women's lives. You know, they sort of talk about the deadbeat father, the one that just doesn't, he's not there, he's not present. And then, I mean, unfortunately with things like Black Lives Matter and how, you know, sons are lost.
Mm.
And so, you know, and then also with Minnie and her abusive lover. And how these things are three extremely recurring stories in our current day narratives about black women and the men in their lives.
Oh, and with that, I think we should conclude part one. Yeah, we're
that
loving
was a heavy ending.
It was a very heavy ending.
I'm hoping you're gonna make it lighter or something.
Let it soak. In fact, should we bother to close? I don't know. Peace. No, I kid you. but this is a really it's a cool movie. It was really cool to revisit because we both watched it before we started the maid sessions, but it's really nice what we're picking up now that we started the maid sessions.
Absolutely.
So we're excited about it, and there's so much more there. So we want to make it a two-part series, so we'll pick up next week. But we hope you enjoyed part one.
Definitely. I mean, it's a movie that certainly taught me some stuff, and I guess it's always nice to have something that you can reflect your own actions against. Also to sort of understand, maybe, you know, what is the bigger picture, what can it become. And I mean, here in the movie it shows that it became something quite scandalous and scary as well, you know, for a lot of people that didn't want these stories to become known. So I found it's so interesting in that sense, because, you know, they would work extremely hard to keep it exactly as is.
Mm.
And then the moment there was a threat to other people knowing what was going on, all of a sudden there was panic and, oh my God, what are we doing?
Mm.
So, And which we've also gotten from time to time, you know, just a lot of people telling us that everything in their homes are okay, almost out of a fear that we're going to reveal something that we just shouldn't know. So, yeah, it's very interesting to get something to, you know, that's sort of a mirror to what we're doing. And we look really forward to discussing the second part of it. But for the moment, again, we'd love to hear your impressions on the movie, your impressions on current day domestic worker roles and relationships. And we are always ready to listen and understand your points of view. So please go to our Twitter page, which is at Made Project, M-A-I-D-E Project, as well as our Facebook page, which is The Made Sessions. Looking so forward to hearing from you guys. For now, have a very lovely afternoon.
No one had ever asked me what it felt like to be me. Once I told the truth about that, I felt free. And I got to thinking about all the people I know and the things I've seen and done. My boy Treelaw always said we gonna have a writer in the family one day. I guess it's gonna be me.
Central.com.